This morning, we celebrate learning more about the Unitarian Universalist Association's first ever Justice General Assembly, which happened in Phoenix this past June. We as Unitarian Universalists stand on the side of love because we engage in our principles, which uphold the inherent dignity and worth of every person, no exceptions. We affirm justice, equity, and compassion in human relations in every area, in every corner of the world. And we stand and we march and we act on the side of love because that is part of our faith. We engage our faith as Unitarian Universalists, and that's what happened at Justice General Assembly this past summer. And I am happy to say that eight, almost nine, members of this congregation attended that General Assembly this summer. Being a rather small congregation, we had a rather large representation in that event. I open with these words by the president of the UUA, Peter Morales. These words are excerpted from reflections on his arrest, which took place on, along with 27 other Unitarian Universalists on July 29th, 2010, where he was protesting the passage of the law SB 1070, which is a very discriminatory immigration law. He wrote, "This is how ethnic cleansing gets started. It comes disguised as law enforcement, as a firm hand protecting social order during chaotic times. Ethnic cleansing is founded upon fear. It is founded upon fear. It requires turning an ethnic or racial group into the other. They are taking over. They are different and will destroy our way of life. The process ends always in violence. We see the early stages of ethnic cleansing in Arizona. And make no mistake, we are all Arizona. Todos somos Arizona, todos somos Arizona." Please be seated. This happens to me all the time. I'm all prepared, and then we sing a hymn, and something pops out at me. And the first verse of that hymn really popped out at me and connected with what happens at General Assembly. It says, "When we trust the wisdom in each of us, every color, every creed, and every kind, and we see our faces in each other's eyes, then our heart is in a holy place." And that's what happens. That mutual respect, that knowing that we really are all one, that there is not separation, that we need to listen and learn from one another and to grow as a people of faith. That's what happens at General Assembly. And I have to tell you, I've spoken about it before, it's quite incredible. John described a hall of 4,000 people with, you know, we're Unitarian Universalists, we each have our own ideas. And the democratic process is used in such a holy way, in such a respectful way. Why? Because we trust the wisdom in each of us. We keep our hearts in a holy place. We're not at the United Nations. We're not at IBM. We're a General Assembly, a faith gathering. And with our hearts in that holy place, we can do the work of democracy at a higher level and a deeper level. And it's amazing. It's totally amazing. And we've got 8 speakers, so I'm gonna cede this microphone pretty soon. But I need to tell you what happened when I was at General Assembly in 2010. What had happened in the background was the Arizona law, SB 1070, had been passed. And the UUA board, the big, important, powerful board, had decided, well, we have to boycott Phoenix for our General Assembly. We can't go there. We're going to boycott. That's the right thing to do. And the president of the UUA, Peter Morales, spoke up and he disagreed. He spoke his truth and he said, let's bring it to the General Assembly. Because he had faith that our hearts would be in an open place, that we could do the work of democracy, and that the will of the people would come forth. So that's a pretty startling thing, to think the board made a decision and the president disagreed and it was brought to the General Assembly. And this is what happened. I'm going to read to you from an article. In 2010, the issue of whether to boycott Phoenix as the site of the 2012 General Assembly had been hotly contested among Unitarian Universalists after passage of SB 1070, which empowers local police to check the immigration status of those otherwise detained. Shortly after the bill's passage at the end of April 2010, the UUA board released a business resolution advocating boycotting the Phoenix General Assembly. Now here's where it begins to look good, folks. That's my words. Here is where Unitarian Universalism and our commitment to democracy is engaged. Engaged is the word I want you to hold in your hearts today. Delegates at the 2010 General Assembly in Minneapolis overwhelmingly endorsed a resolution Saturday committing themselves to holding a special Justice General Assembly in Phoenix in 2012. The resolution's passage was the result of many, many assemblies doing hard work with open hearts, listening to the wisdom of each other. Many assemblies, which produced the document after hours and hours of meetings, negotiations, and compromise. Immigration was the dominant theme of the General Assembly of 2010 in Minneapolis. The assembly called for a special General Assembly devoted to immigration justice in Arizona. So, my friends, immigration as a moral issue became the Congregational study action issue for the next 4 years. I want you to know, I've been to a lot of worship services in my life. The most powerful worship I have ever experienced was at those plenary sessions in General Assembly, where people's hearts did open in a holy place, where people did engage the spiritual principle of democracy. It's deeply spiritual to engage democracy. It takes the ego and the I out of the center of the universe. So that's the backdrop for hearing what we have to hear today from 8 people from our congregation who made the trek to Arizona, to Phoenix, and to the General Assembly. Let's welcome them now. And so, who's gonna go first? Charlie? Charlie will go first, thank you.
Good morning. My name is Charlie Donnelly, and I am one of what's known as the GA8. The General Assembly in Phoenix this past June was the third one that I had attended. The first two were in Boston and Fort Lauderdale, and they were the traditional with plenary sessions where everyone gets together to discuss and vote, and workshops. Workshops I have attended in the past ranged from excellent to my walking out after 10 minutes. The General Assembly in Phoenix was a completely different experience. We didn't just sit and listen, we did. Iris and I and others from the GA8 and also from the attendees went to a school on a Saturday to help immigrants become citizens. I worked with two separate immigrants to fill out their citizenship applications. And Iris also did translating because she can speak Spanish. When you work with, it's incredibly complicated, this application. And there's all kinds of pitfalls. And after all that, they still have to pass a citizenship test, which I think a lot of Americans would have trouble with. So the training we had the night before at the GA helped. But even with that, the process at the school was to have the applicant go before three different people who had to check and recheck the same application. There were also immigration lawyers there too. We also left the comfort of our air-conditioned convention center and went into the 100-degree heat to protest at Sheriff Joe Arpaio's tent city, where inmates live in tents year-round, with bugs in their food, where some of the temperatures on the top bunk can reach 150 degrees in the summer. Iris and I were on the first bus to arrive at the Maricopa County Jail Complex in West Phoenix. This is a sprawling facility that looks like a military base with armored vehicles and troop transport trucks. Standing there with thousands of other UUs and local activists, we listened to speakers and chanted so that the residents of the tent city could hear us and knew that we were with them. I found at this General Assembly we were much more united in the past, we were much more united than in the past. We were all talking about the same things. This year, General Assembly changed us, and we can't go back to attending GAs the way they were. And hopefully, they will be more like Phoenix. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Iris Donnelly, and one of my joys in traveling is collecting points of departure for future learning. While at GA, I would often jot down in my dog-eared notebook the titles of books and movies, articles, or names of people that I'd like to learn more about. After seeing the movie The Minister's War, we found out that Waitzel and Martha Sharp were two of only three Americans listed in the Righteous Among Nations of Israel's National Holocaust Memorial, Yad Vashem. And Waitzel Sharp was a Unitarian minister in Wellesley, Mass., and he and his wife, Martha, left behind two small children, and they went to Central Europe and helped rescue well over 2,000 refugees who were doomed to extinction. And Waitzel Sharp made national news when he declared war on Hitler many years before our country did. So anyway, who was the third American listed among the Righteous of Nations? And he was the American Schindler, and his name was Varian Fry, and he too had a list. He arrived in Vichy-controlled Marseille in southern France on August the 15th, 1940, with $3,000 taped to his leg, and a charge from the organization he worked for, the Emergency Rescue Committee, to help save endangered refugees targeted by the Nazis, mainly artists, writers, and intellectuals. Those fleeing the Third Reich numbered in the thousands, and the French authorities were cooperating with the Germans by refusing to issue exit visas. He stayed for 13 months until he was thrown out of the country. Varian Fry assisted approximately 2,000 people, among them an all-star lineup, including Marc Chagall, Max Ernst, André Breton, Jacques Lipchitz, Marcel Duchamp, and John Arp. A trip to Germany in 1935 turned him into an ardent anti-Nazi. In Berlin, he went to see Ernst Haffenstahl, a German-American who is now an official in the upper echelons of the Nazi propaganda ministry. He told Varian Fry that Hitler and Goebbels were determined to exterminate the Jews. This interview merely reinforced what he had seen in the city's streets. And at the age of 32, he decided to do something concrete in the struggle against Hitler. Fry underwent a transformation, discovering reserves of courage and energy in himself that he never knew existed. The devotion with which he went about his unending work, his labors to the point of exhaustion, suggested something spiritual, even religious. One colleague called his efforts a miracle. The author of his biography called his efforts divine inspiration. From his isolated position in Marseille, Varian Fry relied on the Unitarian Service Committee in Lisbon, Portugal, to help the refugees he sent. This office, staffed by American Unitarians under the direction of Robert Dexter, helped refugees to wait in safety for visas and other necessary papers, and to gain ship passage from Lisbon to the United States. Varian Fry helped other refugees escape on ships leaving Marseille for the French colony of Martinique, from which they also could go to the United States. And if you're interested in finding out about books and movies related to Varian Fry, please see me during coffee hour. Thank you.
In my many personas this morning, I'm now speaking as Carolyn Hurtis, who couldn't be with us today. In late May, before the GA, I went on a service learning project with a group of seven other UUs from around the country. We learned and witnessed much about immigration in Tucson, Arizona, and Nogales, a Mexican border town. After a two-day stay in Nogales, where we got to meet many migrant workers who were either being forced to return home or waiting to attempt crossing the border, we headed back to the United States. Oh, that's better. After being checked through the port of entry, our leader took a short detour to show us the wall from the U.S. side. This is the border wall, which has been constructed with $1.2 billion of our tax dollars to to keep migrant workers from crossing to the U.S. The wall separating the U.S. and Nogales is 20 feet high, made of slabs of steel about 6 inches wide and 2 inches space in between, and stretches as far as the eye can see. As we were getting out of the van to inspect the wall, we were greeted by a Border Patrol officer who wanted to know what we were doing there. We explained we just wanted to see the wall up close. He seemed a bit suspicious of us. I can't imagine any of us, middle age and beyond, were capable of climbing it. And before he knew it, another Border Patrol officer sped up. The two of them confronted us while wielding their machine guns. It was hard to believe that a few middle-aged Americans could cause such a stir by looking at our wall. It scared us all a bit, but the biggest impression on me was that I learned that the effect of the wall has had on the number of migrants who have attempted to cross the desert. Yes, it has decreased the number of people attempting to cross the desert, but the number of deaths from crossing has remained the same. In Arizona, the wall has caused people to take a far more treacherous route to enter the U.S., adding 50 miles of inhospitable terrain through the Sonoran Desert and the mountains to reach the first road where they could be picked up and transported north. The number attempting to cross the desert has decreased, but the number of migrant deaths remained the same. They continue to die, attempting to find work, picking our crops, and cleaning our hotel rooms to provide for their destitute families left behind. It is estimated since 1999, 5,000 migrants have died along the U.S.-Mexican border.
Good morning. I'm Val Follett, and I jumped out of my chair because I think mine kind of follows John's. What I want to share with you today, I learned in the classes that we held here last spring on immigration. It helped us a lot in getting ready to go to GA. I'm so glad I went to GA, but when I come home, I hear people say, they came here illegally. They shouldn't be here. They broke the law. They need to go home. So I am moved today to speak a bit of the background of this problem that I learned in the classes we had last spring. I want to share with you a couple of reasons that Mexicans try to enter our country and are willing to die trying. One aside statement is I've heard that if all the 11 million undocumented migrants were rounded up and sent home, our economy would collapse. That's how important they are to this country. Mexicans have crossed the border to earn money in the United States for generations. Their desire is to come here, do the jobs that our people will not do for the money paid. They live in terrible conditions. They earn money to support their families, and they go home again. Now that we have made it so difficult to cross the border, many are now staying here and trying to get their families to join them because they have no choice. Also, many of the poor in Mexico are farmers. They sell their extra vegetables, especially corn, at market to earn income for their families. When our country signed the North American Free Trade Agreement, known as NAFTA, we flooded Mexico with cheap, genetically modified corn grown from sterile Monsanto seeds, selling it at a lower price than the farmers could, effectively putting them out of business. So now these poor farmers are trying to earn money for their families by coming to our country. Yes, there are problems with drug smuggling, but most of the Americans who come here do so to work to support their families by honest means. If conditions in Mexico were better, they would not come. If they could earn a living at home, That's where they want to be. They come to a land that used to be theirs until we went to war and took it from them. Don't we owe our neighbors a helping hand?
I haven't talked very much about my GA experience since I came home because I've really been overwhelmed with the amount of injustice I learned about there and was reinforced that happens in the U.S. We hear about it overseas all the time, but we don't realize the amount that's here, right here in our own backyard. And what was most striking was the way that immigrants are treated. I mean, undocumented workers, they have absolutely no rights. I mean, criminals in this country have many, many more rights. Anybody but undocumented workers basically have no rights. The detention system itself has become very institutionalized. Most of the detention centers are run as for-profits, and these for-profit companies lobby to make sure that the immigration laws aren't changed. They detain people for long periods of time. I mean, sometimes people are in detention for more than a year. And during that period of time, they're really not afforded the same rights as somebody who's in prison is. Okay? But it was gratifying. It was great to be able to do witness and to join the busloads of people, you know, more than 1,000 of people that went to demonstrate at the tent city in Arizona, which is the detention for people in Phoenix. And it's the conditions there are horrifying. I mean, the fact that we were all overwhelmed with the heat in Phoenix. I mean, it was 110 degrees most days. And you couldn't stand in the sun. You had to stand in the shade. And even so, you just couldn't wait to get to air conditioning. And these people are kept year-round in conditions. They don't have any air conditioning. They're in tents. And as Charlie said before, you know, it gets incredibly hot in those tents. And they're just inhuman that we could treat people like this and not give them any rights is just overwhelmingly unfair, and that we could do it in this country, the richest country on earth.
This will be a little bit more of a personal account, I think, but I just want to mention, first of all, that Joe Arpaio is the sheriff of Maricopa County, includes Phoenix, and Tent City is often referred to as Joe Arpaio's prison. had a meeting before the vigil, before the witness or our big demonstration, and the meeting was to let us know what it was going to be like to go on a demonstration over to Tent City, and we they told us that you know, it's going to be very hot and you're going to be standing for 2.5 hours, and I know that my feet really hurt a lot sooner than that. And the third thing they said was going to be a counter demonstration. And remember, people in Arizona have the right to carry arms in public. They can carry guns in public. And there's going to be a counter demo. And there will be the police there, and they're going to keep order. But if you have any trepidations, don't go, they said. Well, I thought to myself whether I should go or not. And I actually decided that I was not going to go. So that was that. I decided I'm done. I'm not going to. I got too much to lose. I'm toward the end of life. I just cannot go and risk that sort of thing. And then I thought, wait a minute. Look at all these people. They're going out there and to demonstrate, and they're accepting the risk. And I thought, you know who's really suffering are the immigrants and the deportees in Tent City. Those people are suffering. And so I thought, you know, I've got to go. And I went to the demonstration. There were more buses than you can count full of people. I didn't know that there were 2,500 of us that went, but in the UU World, it pointed that out. It was an article in the latest UU World. And when I went, I looked at the counter demonstration, and it was only a few people. I don't know how many, but very few. And one guy had a sign that said, "I like Joe Arpaio." Well, I thought, well, that's his right. This is his free speech. He can say that. And then we went into the demo, and finally, when my feet were hurting, I sat down on a curb. And as all of a sudden, this young guy came up and said, "Hey, look, I got chairs." They wheeled out stacks of chairs, and so we had chairs. It wasn't so bad. We had candles. They weren't real candles. They were electric candles. And so that was what it was like. And then on the way back to the buses, there were a few people along the side, and they looked like, to me, they looked like Native Americans who were actually Mexicans, and they were thanking us. And somehow, that was precious. I don't know, I can't say it. That was precious. They were thanking us. But I wanted to point out the struggle of trying to make a decision. Sometimes you have to make a difficult decision. And I had actually decided it one way, and then realized that I had to do this. I had to go on this vigil. Well, that vigil was went into more than 200 newspapers, and it got on the news. See, that's half of the point. The other half was letting the suffering know that we're there. That's very important.
At this year's GA, the Ware Lecture was given by Maria Hinojoso, called "Stories from the Frontline of the New America: Detention, Deportation, and the Power of the Democratic Resistance." For 25 years, Maria Hinojoso has helped tell America's untold stories and brought to light unsung heroes in America and abroad. She is the anchor and managing editor of NPR's Latino USA. She produced an incredible documentary film, "Lost in Detention," shown on the PBS series Frontline, and we hope to show that again during this coming year. This was a very moving experience for me, hearing these words, and I want to share a small portion of this speech with you today. I urge you to go to the UUA website and read it in its entirety. These are Maria's words. "I remember standing in the hallway at the same CNN where Lou Dobbs worked and meeting Nobel Prize winner Elie Wiesel, who survived the Holocaust. This person was the one who taught me to question the use of the term illegal immigrant. It was Elie Wiesel who said to me, 'Do not use the term illegal to refer to immigrants.' 'Why?' asked Maria. And he answered, 'Because there's no such thing as an illegal human being. You may have broken an immigration law, in this case, actually a misdemeanor, but that does not make you an illegal person. That's as if you ever been stopped for a speeding and given a ticket. Does that make you an illegal driver forever? There's no such thing as an illegal human being, and it's a dangerous term to use.' 'Why?' Maria asked. He answered, 'The Nazis declared the Jews to be an illegal people, and that was the beginning of the Holocaust.' Then Maria goes on to say, 'I've never told this story before in public, but because I wanted to base my speech on facts, I decided this was the time. A young woman, who she spoke of earlier, was detained and sexually assaulted, a single mom from Austin, the one who had told about rats. She was not very smart, That doesn't mean that somebody who's not very smart or sophisticated should be detained, but she had a certain humbleness about her and simplicity. So this woman began to tell me the story about what would happen in those circus tents when they would find lice or bedbugs. You know, Maria, then, what they would do is they would take all the bedding, all the pillows, and they would put it in a big pile. And they would strip us all down of everything. They would put everything in a big pile and take it away. And then all the women would be standing naked in line for the showers, which were out in the open. And this woman said to me, "You know, Maria, there was a movie I used to watch when I was a kid. I felt like I was in it. Maria, did you ever see Schindler's List?"
What most impressed me from GA is really some of the summaries of what people have said. There was a final sermon on Sunday. Its voice was a summary of our actions over the week. It articulated all of the elements of our experience. One, background sermons and rationale for taking action. Two, clear articulation of the details of the action we were to and did take. Three, description of the training for instructors and the instructional tasks which enabled the 300 immigrants complete their papers as Charlie described. Four, a description and background of the rally at Tent City on Sunday night, including Maria Hinojosa's lecture and the virtually full participation of the GA delegates and community partners. That rally was a wonderful feeling of solidarity. We functioned as a religion, a spirit of great clarity and diversity.
Thank you, friends, for your voices, but most of all, thank you for your action, for engaging your bodies, your minds, and your spirits, and going to Arizona and making a difference. Thank you for representing us. I am mindful of the time, and I think we've had a lot of wonderful music, and the next hymn is one of my favorites, but I'm going to suggest that we end this service at this time, and my closing words are, no ethnic cleansing in this country. It gets stopped by us. It gets stopped by people engaging in action, in faith. We are marching in the light of God. We're not standing, we're not sitting, we're not twiddling our thumbs. We must be a people of action. Why? Todos somos Arizona, my friends. Todos somos Arizona. Blessed be. Amen.